Ah, the beautiful waning years of the 1990s, when any slasher that even kinda ripped off Scream got at least two sequels, even Urban Legend, even though that series was immediately made redundant the first time a producer said the words Final Destination. The original may not have gone to number one, but somehow Urban Legend's final cut was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hi, my name is Sean Collier. I am here with two surly but reasonable NASA employees. It's Robin Hitchcock.
We can't possibly do all this for just one man.
And Camila Adams.
Science.
Yeah, just like the first time I watched The Martian, we watched it, and I liked it, and it was fine, and now it's gone from my mind. What else?
Yeah, I'm just stuck with the taste in my mouth that I enjoyed a Matt Damon performance.
He was there, being science-y and fine and normal. Hey, everyone, say hello to our special guest, Peanut. Here's what's happening. It's a chaotic day. I got home and started setting up. And there's a contractor looking at the roof, but Peanut is like, what the hell is happening? Hold on, I'm just going to grab him. In the meantime, someone say something about The Martian, I guess.
We didn't talk about how Nick Mohammed, I think his name is, Nate from Ted Lasso, is in it.
Who? What? Who is Nick Mohammed? I am unaware. I am unfamiliar with this Ted Lasso phenomena that is happening.
Oh.
Because I refuse to get another streaming service. So
yeah, you don't need Apple Plus. The only reason that we have it, like I think most people who have Apple Plus, is that if you buy a device,
right,
you get a year. But yeah, Ted Lasso is as good as people say it is.
One of these days. One of these days, yeah. I'll come across it in some way, shape, or form. But
absolutely.
I realize the thing with me is the moment that Mary Beth became like a sports fanatic, like our TV opportunity flew out the window, because we both love to watch a lot of movies. Anytime we're both going to have 90 minutes, there's a movie on.
Right.
And when it's in that smaller thing, we're putting a sport on. And if I'm alone, I'm catching up on wrestling. Oh. So I'm about done with serialized content other than Marvel movies. I'm sure Ted Lasso is great.
It's great.
Well, the only tie I can tell you between The Martian and Urban Legend's final cut isn't even. But the third Urban Legend movie, Urban Legend Bloody Mary, guess what that one's about? starred a 21-year-old Kate Mara. That's her.
Whoa.
Here's the horror movie I'm doing at the beginning of my career.
Interesting.
That's kind of cute.
Yeah.
Urban Legend's final cut. It's bad.
I had such a good time watching this movie.
Right, like it's bad, but it's like, I don't know, just like at some point the wheels just fell off. Like I was with it. I was like, okay, you know, it's not so terrible, but then just like shit just started and then I'm like, okay, let me off this ride.
I am excited to hear your perspective on this as a former film student.
Oh boy.
Because this has an idea about film school that doesn't sound like what I think film school is like.
You all had, like, you know, budgets in the tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars, and, like, full airplane sets and
absolutely,
such,
absolutely,
right?
Yeah, that was something that we absolutely had. Not to mention all the amounts of, like, latex and special effects that you had to just, like, go off and do whatever, and the access to just random carnival rides and just like the
end where they go through their just standing sets, because
right,
that's a thing that exists,
right.
Like I don't know, I like it. It is fun that they were like, let's just put all of the normal
right
end of a horror movie set pieces and have them walk from one to the other. But it was hard to suspend my disbelief
right.
that much.
Well, at that point, I was like, is this a film university or is this a film department? Because, I mean, if it's a university dedicated to film, like, all right, maybe I'll go ahead and accept that. But I didn't know. And then, two, like, the other thing that, like, came out to me was, like, when their dude had filmed old girl's murder. And then he played it for them, you know, he snuck it in there and played it while they were all watching something else. And yeah. My immediate thought was, I need to know a time frame as to when, like, between that when happened, because it's not instantaneous that you can just go ahead and develop 16 millimeter film. That's like, so I recall waiting a couple days for my film to come back developed and processed.
Yes, that's a really good point.
To your first question, there are like six times when someone, usually the Loretta Devine, is like, we need help in the film department. Okay. I'm like, that's the entire school and the town around it. Like, you need to be more specific. All anyone does here is make right. awful 12-minute student films with ridiculously high production values. Oh, man. Well, if you haven't seen this, and I'm sure you haven't, well, before we do the recap, I guess we need to spoil Urban Legend. We will avoid outright spoiling Urban Legend's final cut, but I don't think we'll be able to avoid telling you about the original.
Right, because it ties in here.
The original is a pretty standard one of these people is the killer slasher set on a teen campus. That makes sense. Set on a college campus. God, I just watched it and I already forget. Did anyone else watch the original?
Yeah, I watched it too.
I mean, I did when it came out.
Yeah, I watched it yesterday also. And yeah, I mean, it's basically, just like you said, it's set on the college campus. And it's one of these kids is the killer. And then Noxzema girl ends up being, like, there's the deaths in, you know, the usual urban legend fashion. And then Noxzema girl, Rebecca Gayhart, I believe is her name. And she ends up being the killer because the main girl, Alicia Witt, was the cause of her boyfriend's death years ago. And so she's come back and, like, so all this was to fuck with her.
Rebecca Gayhart plays someone avenging an accidental homicide.
And she is like, and she just fucking like goes for it. Like, kind of like she plays it hard as hell. I'm like, Becky, I need you to reel it in a little bit. I know you're supposed to be psychotic, but this is too much. This is too much.
I think you could draw a line between having to be the villain who's avenging a vehicular manslaughter and then the fact that she went nuts when she herself did a vehicular manslaughter several years later.
Right.
She's just waiting for someone to come kill her in an elaborate horror movie fashion.
Here's my question after two of these movies. Why was it Urban Legends, though? In my mind, it's because the obvious red herring in the first one is Robert Englund, who's playing a professor who teaches about urban legends. Mm-hmm. So the only reason she makes every death look like an urban legend is to cast suspicion on him.
Well, no, right? That's not the only reason, because the reason why her boyfriend was killed is because those girls were doing an urban legend of, you know, the gang initiation, flashed the lights, and like they turned off their headlights in the car and waited for somebody to flash their lights. And then when he did, they started to chase him. And that's the urban legend, is that it was a gang initiation thing. And so that led to his death.
Again, I watched this movie 4 days ago and I'm like, what was the point? Yeah, it's a slasher movie. It was Rebecca Gayhart. You thought it was Robert Englund. Then you thought it was Jared Leto, because he was the creepy reporter who didn't care about human life.
Always lurking around.
He's always lurking. It was Rebecca Gayhart. They do say in the last reel of the movie something about, oh, the girl who did it went on to do Noxzema commercials. And we all go, ha, 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 ha.
Yes, which means nothing to anybody that was born, like most adults these days, millennials, they have no idea what the fuck that means.
I can't, like, it is so weird to think about how ubiquitous she was as Noxzema girl, and I feel like there are genuine adults right now who don't even know what Noxzema is.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The best thing about the original movie, which I learned after the fact, was they're on a fictional college campus. The fictional college campus has a Latin motto, which is on the screen at various times, and the Latin motto translates to, the best friend did it.
Shut up. Are you serious?
I like it.
That's amazing.
Best friend of the final girl.
That's amazing.
I like it. One of the things I remember disliking about the original Urban Legends movie was that it was assuming a lot of familiarity with urban legends that I did not have, because that's not really something that you know, I'm not a horror person, right, and I don't want to hear about it. but this one was on the flip side, where they'd be like, you know that urban legend where?
Right.
And then you'd have to watch it, and it was like, okay, you're wasting my time.
You're doing an awful lot of explanation here. Thank you.
Yes.
There are at most two urban legends in Final Cut.
Yeah, like,
that is, you are right. You are absolutely right. It is a loose application of that premise. Are we meant to think that she is making the original film?
Dude, I don't know.
No, because the film that she's making here has even less to do with the original.
Right.
Other than Reese.
The sequel does.
All right, let's do the plot summary so that I can be reminded of what this movie is supposed to be about.
I'm going to stumble through this, see what happens.
Yeah, here to tell you, now that we've made it so clear what the first movie is about, let's tell you what the second movie is about. Here is Camila Adams with a 60-second plot description.
A plane full of people going to Hawaii. A couple of passengers decide to join the Mile High Club. When they come out, everyone's dead and the plane is going down. The killer comes, corners them in the cockpit, and the director yells, cut. They're making a student film. There's an assembly that's sort of announcing that it's time to think about winning the Hitchcock Award in a film school. Amy is walking along in the snow in the dark, and Reese, the security guard from the first one, gives her a ride and an idea for her thesis film, the plot of the first movie. Her professor thinks it's a cool idea and says, okay. Jacinda from the real world London gets roofied and kidnapped, wakes up in a tub of ice, kidney gone. She tries to get away, doesn't make it, and her kidney is fed to a dog. Toby, the cliche film student, drops off of Amy's film crew, accusing her of stealing his thesis genre. Amy's actress friend Sandra gets killed after forgetting her car keys. The killer filmed the murder and sneaks it into Amy's private screening. Amy's disturbed. Everyone else thinks it's cool art form. Travis gets a C on his thesis film and kills himself. Joey Lawrence has a daddy in Hollywood and scoffs at Amy for trying to make her own way when she's too has a famous director dad. Turns out Travis has a twin named Trevor. Amy's new DP gets murdered, but she can't prove it because she lost the surveillance footage. Before filming another scene for Amy's film in the carnival ride, Stan and Dirk are killed. The killer, come to find out, is Professor Solomon. Reasons? He's mad at Amy's dad for not voting for his film 100 years ago. Reese stumbles upon the scene and is a standoff. Solomon leaps at Amy. He shoots him. There's a movie at the end of this movie because this movie doesn't want to die. Solomon is in a mental hospital with Brenda from the first one as his nurse.
That was a good 88 seconds, but, you know, could you have done any better? Other than just saying, fucking horror movie, people
right.
die, one of them did it.
Originally, like, I had started off taking notes as like, okay, I'll just do this as a series of the urban legends that are done. But then I was like, okay, so we're just, like Robin was talking about, I was like, oh, we're just not, we just kind of walked away from that premise. Then there was like maybe two.
Is the Mile High Club thing, is that an urban legend I'm supposed to be familiar with?
I'm not familiar with it. I mean, okay. I know the guy was talking about the Twilight Zone, like a Twilight Zone episode.
And he's like, you know that old movie? And I was like, come on. Like, you can't say Twilight Zone?
Right.
Or like, don't lie to us. We all know that's not a movie.
When it got to the unknown twin brother, I'm like, okay, we could have simplified. Like,
yeah.
There were a lot of ways to get to where you were going, and you're taking a very roundabout path.
It was
so
unnecessary.
I was sure that he was going to be the same guy, but
right.
he wasn't. That was not a twist.
I thought it was going to be the actual dude, too, but at that point, I'm also just like, sure, whatever. Take
also,
me on this
when
journey.
They were like, Travis killed himself, I was like, who is Travis?
We were in the last scene and like one guy shows up who's like, you know, gonna complicate things or save the day or whatever, and I'm like, have you been in the movie? I don't know.
Creepy balcony guy.
Yeah.
Before we even got to creepy balcony guy, like the second like vaguely quiet auteurish film student who was there, who was standing in the sci-fi set and then he dropped something.
Joey
and that
Lawrence?
Distracted them.
Or I'm sorry, Joseph Lawrence. As he is credited in this film. Yeah. He just kind of pops in and out just to be a dick. Like, and then he shows up.
I actually thought he was pretty good, though. Like, he definitely had, like, the right degree of, do you know who my father is? Smart.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
This is the worst Scream 2 ever. okay. I know I saw Urban Legend, the original, at a fairly young age. It's not good, but I like it.
Right.
Especially the opening with Brad Dourif yelling someone's in the back seat. That's perfect. Mm-hmm. And I had never seen any of the other ones. And my general reaction to this one is, why is it so boring and bad and dumb? I can and will justify every point I give this movie because it
yeah.
Oof.
I had fun.
Well, I mean, it's still like kind of like the first one. I just don't understand how a second, like the first one was already, we had like a B-list cast to begin with in that one, that first one. And it was just like, I thought like maybe a half a handful of people saw this movie. I don't understand how that was not number one in the box office. Sure, let's go ahead and make a second one. And that was number one in the box office with clearly a D-list cast of characters, which, you know,
right.
In Anthony and Ava's defense, they go on to do bigger and better things. But at that time, like, nobody gave a fuck about, like, Joseph Lawrence was the biggest name on that roster at that time.
Ava Mendez looks like a different species than all of these D-list actors. Mm-hmm. Like, whenever she is on screen, it's like, what are you doing here? You know that you're an actual movie star, right?
How did you get mixed up in this nonsense?
I thought it had to be her because I was like, well, because come on, look, she's right. The only one who, like, can pull off that villain speech because the professor sure couldn't.
Oh, geez.
That's Ellis from Die Hard.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought he was
good for him working 15 years later.
Yeah, I thought he was doing like discount Duchovny.
I thought 100 times I thought the words David Duchovny type appeared on the casting sheet for this. Well, to answer Camila's question, what the hell happened here? Urban Legends Final Cut was released September 22nd, 2000. It was the 25th number one movie of that year. Won that weekend with $8.5 million. We mentioned last week the runner-up was the newly released director's cut of The Exorcist. And The Exorcist nearly won. It made $8.1 million. Urban Legends, certainly a short reign, fell to number four the next week, behind the debuting Remember the Titans, fell below The Exorcist Director's Cut, and fell below Almost Famous, which was out at the time. $4.4 million in its second week, only spent 3 weeks in the top 10, for a lowly total of $21.4 million. That is 96th overall for the year 2000. $3,000 less than Battlefield Earth. So,
wow.
Great job. In fact, it's not even in the top 10 horror films of the year 2000.
Wow.
The original was a slightly bigger hit, although not a number one movie in America. Urban Legend opened September 25th of 1998, $10.5 million. It opened in third. The number one was the second week of Rush Hour. Rush Hour was huge. The movie Ronin debuted that week, just barely beat Urban Legend. In the shortest answer, Urban Legend was not number one because there was competition. Mm-hmm. This one was a number one because there wasn't. Urban Legend, singular, made $38 million, spent 4 weeks in the top 10, 55th overall for 1998. The other part of the reason, by 2000, studios had started to get a little wary of competing with the Summer Olympics. I mentioned this at the end of the last episode.
Right.
This was the middle week of the, which one's 2000? Where Sydney. Were they? Sydney Olympics. The Olympics can hurt the box office by as much as 20%. So studios don't always have a major release. Like 1996's middle Olympic weekend was won by A Time to Kill with $14.8 million. Speaking of The Exorcist, in 2004, Exorcist the Beginning won a weekend because it was during the Olympics with $18 million. There can be hits, but this year in particular, they were like, let's not mess around. Sure, Urban Legends Final Cut, you can have the weekend. There was a third film, as mentioned, Urban Legends Bloody Mary. That went straight to video in 2005, so they did learn their lesson and not try to get people to buy a whole movie ticket. This movie was not well received. It is currently 9% on Rotten Tomatoes. These single-digit scores are rare, but here's one. A dismal D-plus cinema score from opening weekend audiences. Although Roger Ebert went to 2 out of 4. That feels very kind of him.
Yeah. I'm with Raj, as per usual.
Yeah, here's unsurprising news. This is the only feature film made by director John Ottman, who's primarily both an editor and a composer, even though those are not two jobs that go together. Sometimes he edits a movie, sometimes he does the score, sometimes he does both. Most often, until recently, for now disgraced director Bryan Singer, he was a longtime Bryan Singer collaborator, edited many of Bryan Singer's films. And, staggeringly, this man, John Ottman, has an Oscar for editing Bohemian Rhapsody.
What? Oh, wow. Wow.
Famously the one that made everyone go, that editing was terrible. How did this happen?
You know the theory, though. I kind of believe this. So the is that the surviving members of Queen were such little bitches in the editing room because, like, that was the whole thing, that they kept being like, this is a movie about Queen, not a movie about Freddie Mercury. More screen time for me. And so, like, if you watch that scene that, like, was viral on Twitter, like, they keep having reaction shots of the other guys in Queen that are completely unnecessary. So the theory is that the editing branch, like, gossiped so much about what a bad experience that editing team had, that it was like a thank you and congratulations for getting through this nightmare kind of vote. Plus all the other branches voting for Bohemian Rhapsody because normal people really like that movie for some reason.
It's so weird. And that's so big with normal people.
Normal people love that movie. And there are a lot of normal people in the Academy.
Yeah. Despite Ottman's Oscar, the successful one involved here is the co-writer, Scott Derrickson. He went on to direct a number of horror movies, including The Exorcism of Emily Rose, Deliver Us from Evil, Sinister 2. And then, shockingly, he got Marvel money. This is the director of Doctor Strange, is the co-writer of Urban Legends Final Cut. According to Wikipedia, he is attached as the director for Labyrinth 2.
No. Why? Why are we doing this? No.
It wasn't good the first time. You were just eight, and there were kooky puppets and David Bowie's dick. Like, it's not we need to revisit.
Can we just let
David
it be?
David Bowie's dick is no longer with us.
Right. We need to find a similarly endowed man wearing to wear a tight codpiece. Yeah, you'll find somebody. Sure. Adam Driver. They'll get Adam Driver.
Oh, God.
Speaking of things that probably won't happen, there was another Urban Legend in development that was immediately before COVID, so that can't be anybody's priority.
Immediately before COVID? So this, as early as recent history, somebody was like, you know what we need? We need a fourth Urban Legend movie.
It was in active development in early 2020.
Like before Scream 5? I would have accepted another Final Destination before this.
I don't think they could have gotten Jared Leto. But Robin, explain the Jared Leto meme for people who have not been exposed to this.
Just that Jared Leto denied in an interview that he ever did the movie Urban Legend. He was asked a question about it, and he was like, what are you talking about? He pretended to not know that that movie existed and, like, stuck by his guns even after the person was like, here you are on IMDb.
Here's the film. Here's you in the film, sir, like, right here. Nope. Wow.
You know, if there wasn't a lot of other evidence that he was a douche, like that's, he's doing a bit there, and it is a bit that only a douche would do.
I don't think, see, because he, like, is, you know, a known raper of teenagers, I'm like, he's trying to get away with gaslighting this reporter.
What? He's a rapist?
Yeah.
Oh, geez. I mean, that has no effect on my life, really. I mean, it's terrible. But it's not like, oh, no, not Jared. It's like, unfortunately, that seems about right. But,
I mean, I think it's like, you know, air quotes, consensual sex.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm sure him waning on his celebrity has nothing to do with any of that. Mm-hmm. Gross.
Robin.
Yeah.
You're the one who's new to this world. Tell us about it.
And maybe that's why I found this movie the most pleasant. I don't know. Like, yes, it's obviously very bad. But I think that what worked for me was that, so Jennifer Morrison is the main character. And I think that she's a pretty compelling screen presence. You know, like, she's very much a TV actor, like, you know, fighting above weight here. But she is good enough to carry this very bad movie on her shoulders. And it kind of feels like an improv set. Where they're just, like, following whatever seems fun. Like, you know what would be cool? If 100 guns fall from the ceiling and only one of them's a real gun. Right? Like, come on. That's fun.
I like when she falls in a lake no one has ever mentioned or seen before. It's like, and in this college campus where there have been many establishing shots, here's a lake that I'm pretty sure she swims out of into a, like, stand-up sewer. Like,
I don't even remember what part you're talking about. Was that when the kidney girl happens? Also, thank you, Camila, for saying that she's from the real world because that was driving me nuts.
She even says it there, something about, oh, so and so is going to be disappointed with the when they get to the real world. And I'm like, is that just like, well, that's just happy, happy coincidence, or was that like a little wink?
I'm pretty sure that's a wink, given the Noxzema joke from the original.
The kidney girl doesn't fall in a lake. Our hero falls in a lake, and then she's in a some kind of a tunnel, a sewer tunnel, and yeah. Loretta Devine shows up for round 4 of 23. Why are you here, and how did you get here so quickly?
They like really
Loretta Devine's great. Trying to make us think that Loretta Devine was the killer, because come on.
I feel like it, because she's the one who brings up the past killings. So but I like, think they were trying to make
that make sense, be satisfying. Obviously, that's not going to be the case.
Well, as indicated by the scene where she pictures the killer's face and then everyone else's face is on top of the killer's face. It could be anyone, man.
Her. She pictures her own face.
Right. I don't even think. Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, that's too much. I want to
wrote down spooky face montage. Plus 3 points or minus 3 points?
It was like every time it was difficult to keep points, because every time I tried to add a point in there, something would immediately happen and be like, all right, never mind. And then like once we got to the end, like when the Professor Solomon was the killer and then his reasons, like that is the most fucking toxic masculinity, like fragile male ego, because her dad didn't vote for your film and right. You want to blame this is why you he actually says, and I've been trapped here ever since, about the university.
Right, get a different job, buddy. Right. So, okay, a couple things. The first, when he was like, oh, it's great to see a fiction film from a whatever your last name is, I was like, all right, comes from documentarian family. And I think because I know that women are better represented in documentary filmmaking, I was like, her mom is the famous documentarian. That would have worked better, because it would make his whole gross professor toxic masculinity thing like hit a little bit more, like right. Your mother voted against my film,
right?
And then secondly, I wondered if this character, if Jennifer Morrison's character was written as black or like, you know, not stated, but like her first main conversation with Loretta Devine is like, here's all these blaxploitation movies I like.
Yeah.
And I was like, what?
Yeah. Oh, well, she had mentioned that she saw them in a film class.
Okay.
Which is the only reason why she ever saw a Pam Grier film. She was like, yeah.
Right, like, I watched one of those old Pam Grier movies out of, you know, cinematic curiosity. Right. But, like, it just, I don't know, it just felt a little, really?
The whole thing, like, I love Loretta Devine. And as I'm sure we've all spoken about our big hearts for Loretta. And I appreciate the fact that she's here. And every point that I give is for Loretta Devine's presence. And yet, but there is just something about it that just really... And I think I still, because I watched the first one too, like right before it, because the way that ends with like Loretta is the one basically who saves them. And like the last couple shots, she gets sliced with a knife or whatever. And she's laying there bleeding out. And she's essentially the one that I think she shoots the Noxzema girl, right, Sean? I think.
Yes.
She shoots her and saves.
So she saves the day.
Yeah, she saves Jared and Alicia. But the thing is, once she does that, Jared runs in and like hugs Alicia, who's untouched, and is like, are you okay? Is everything fine? While poor Reese is like laying there bleeding the fuck out. She's got like 12 inches of exposed innards on her chest. And then they're like, oh my God, Reese. And they go, you know, tend to her or whatever. And then the next shot is them driving away. And then he's like, she says, oh, I feel bad about leaving Reese. He's like, it's okay. The paramedics are on their way.
What?
So you just left her there.
Oh my gosh.
So I am just kind of pissed about the treatment of Reese in this franchise.
Rebecca Gayhart was in the back seat, so really they did her a favor. They took the killer away from the scene.
I'm very upset. I feel like there were times when Loretta Devine's character had a questionable work ethic, and I was kind of like, you know that people get murdered, like, and it's your job to watch the security feed. Maybe you should. But now I'm like, yeah, no, don't bother. Just collect your paycheck.
Right, fuck those dudes.
Let those fools kill each other whenever they want.
I think it was also a little bit overdone about how many times she called her that crazy white girl.
Yeah.
And I'm like, she might be, but still, I mean, this is like really, this is a trope, and it's too stereotypical. I don't like it.
For two whole movies, Loretta has to keep saying, I called the police and they didn't take it seriously. Like, which happens to Kidney Girl as right. well.
911 hangs up on her.
I was very upset by that as someone who recently watched every episode of 911. I was like, Jennifer Love Hewitt would not hang up on you.
Would never.
And then when the movie reaches a point of utter absurdity that the police aren't involved, creepy twin brother is like, I have a criminal past, so we can't let the police know about these unrelated murders.
What, did you get like picked up for a little DUI back in college? Like, what? What? What could you possibly have done so terrible, white man, that's not going to let the cops believe you?
I know this is far from the biggest sin in this movie, but what bar has rows of pre-made cosmopolitans ready to hand out?
I was just completely baffled by that whole
well,
section.
Children.
Were they originally trying to drug both of them? Were they going to take all their kidneys?
Well, children who were probably not of drinking age
right,
in 2000.
Right, I was 2000.
Yes, this was a thing. You can thank Sex and the City,
right?
Because there were bars that had martini night or Cosmo night, and they would just have that shit pre-made because everybody wanted to drink them, and they're like, fuck it, I'm not doing individual fucking Cosmos for every douchebag who comes in here asking for it because Carrie Bradshaw loves them. So
okay.
It was a thing. It did happen.
Thank
All
you.
All right. What,
again,
a, what a time
Camila
to be alive.
Representing people born before 1984.
That's the resident old head here.
I should have mentioned when we were back on The Killer. I guess we're spoiling this movie.
Who cares? No one's going to watch this.
Who's going to watch it? Like, it's barely, you are barely able to watch it anywhere. Like, at first I tried to watch it on Vudu and they were like, you can't rent it, you can buy it. I was like, you can fucking kick rocks.
Yeah, I spent $4 American watching this movie.
That brings its gross for this year to 8. Why did the killer have an entire second motivation? Because at a certain point, they're like, also, there's this subplot about how they find the one student's film, but then they've spliced another name on top of it because the professor is going to steal the film, and that's his ticket out mm-hmm. back into Hollywood's good grade. Sir, no student film in history has gotten anyone a career. I don't care if the most successful student films ever made are like, this was just a student film, and it got a tiny release and a right. few award nominations. Like, right. what do you think is going to happen? And
wait, was it a feature?
That's what I was confused, too, because I was like, did they just sit here and watch a whole feature film while there's a murderer running around?
Aside from the fact that, are you here because you're mad about the movie before, or are you here because you're trying to get this movie now? Have you even worked out why you're killing people?
He decided one day that society had done him wrong. He's had enough, and so I'm just going to fucking kill these kids. So yeah, I guess that's the thing. So he was still pretty mad at old girl's dad. He saw Trevor's film, fell in love with it, and thought, this is my ticket out. And so then he had to kill everybody involved in making said film.
He was killing everybody who could dispute his
right that he
version
did
of events.
Exactly. And then she rolls in with her idea for a new film for her film. And he's like, oh, that's what I'll do with the urban legends. So
yeah, I'll frame you using this. I thought it was weird that they watched that one girl get murdered on film. Mm-hmm. After constantly making fun of her hilariously awful acting.
Right.
Like, she does a bad job of doing bad acting. It's really something to behold. And then no one says, like, wait a second, she's acting.
Right.
This might be real. They're just like, oh, wow, good for her. Yeah, okay. And it's not till they find her body that they actually think she's gone. They're not like, hey, where's that girl who we constantly make fun of? Haven't seen her around. Maybe she's at a bell tower having rats crawl out of her neck.
Well, the thing was, and this was also kind of like similar to a plot in the first one, is that she was supposed to be going to L.A. for an audition or to be on ER or something, a bit part. And that's why nobody was looking for her. And that's the same thing that happened in the first one. Joshua Jackson gets killed right before he's supposed to go on a ski trip. And nobody's looking for him. That's why nobody, you know, they don't find his body.
I saw somewhere that, what's his name, Ottman, said that he was trying to do a giallo. here, which is interesting that we landed on it because I've watched a ton of it. Was just Jollapalooza at Riverside Drive-In.
Yeah, what is that?
Jollo is Italian, mostly Italian, mostly like suspense horror from the 60s and 70s. Dario Argento, when he's not being supernatural, Lucio Fulci, Mario Bava, all did a lot of Jollo. It's essentially crime suspense horror movies. Deep Red, Blood and Black Lace, The Bird with the Crystal Plumage. I've watched a bunch of these recently because I'm gonna anyway. Also, it's that time of year. Also, there was Jollapalooza. This is just, if you want to know how to like kind of be in the genre exactly wrong, it's Urban Legends Final Cut, because this stuff happens. Like, there'll be a murder or a string of murders that are like either kind of covered up or not taken seriously immediately. Characters will disappear with like a vague explanation. Normal people will get involved in trying to figure out what's going on. The look of the killer is very Jollo inspired, except Jollo works because it is so soaked with weird atmosphere and beautiful production design and Ennio Morricone scores and all of this filmmaking that you don't care that it's weird and the plot doesn't quite work. Like, that's right. If you don't take all that away, it's just weird and the plot doesn't quite work. That's where we're at here. Oh, the trailer.
I thought that this was an original basic cable movie from the 1990s, and it worked for me on that level. Like,
right.
The same extent that, like, Friends Till the End, that movie where some girl tries to single white female Shannon Doherty. Works for me same way that this does.
Yeah, like, if this were a Lifetime movie, it's just I had a hard time believing that this was actually released in theaters. I'm like,
it is truly implausible that this was not only released in theaters, but that enough people saw it that it's on our list.
Right.
It's mind-blowing.
And the one character, fucking dude with the tactile turtleneck, whatever his name, he is why everybody hates film students. Like, this guy is like what everybody thinks a film student is and why they hate him. And yes, they do exist, and I had a few in my film school career, and I hated them as well.
Finger tent fucking action. He feels very real.
How presumably this film is being made by filmmakers, and yet every time they have to have someone talking about film, it sounds like they just pulled film words out of a book. It's someone going, the mise-en-scene of cinema verite is what?
What are you saying?
He was saying they're mutually exclusive, Sean.
Did not convince me. The trailers.
I got a good story. Yeah, it's about a campus serial killer who murders 8 students.
Urban legends. We've all told them.
True story, right?
We've all heard them.
Ah! Oh, God. Oh, God. Ready?
Ah! Cut! She's no Jamie Lee Curtis, right?
But these students are daring.
Urban Legends, scene 6, take 2.
To film them.
The movie is about a serial killer whose murders are all based on urban legends.
That's pretty cool.
Now.
It's a tradition during finals week. At the stroke of midnight, everyone screams.
Someone is turning legends.
But at the same time, a co-ed is brutally attacked.
Into reality.
Whoever's doing this is gonna come after you again. Trust me.
It's just an urban legend.
Urban legend, my ass.
Urban Legends, Final Cut.
Camila, talk to us about the trailer.
I mean, it's just about, like, yeah, that's exactly what I had anticipated.
I genuinely don't know how to vote here.
it's neither better nor worse. We're right there on the mark. Like, yep. That's, you sold me exactly what was coming.
Like,
I was like, the guy, the movie trailer voice guy, he couldn't believe what he was saying. Like, he wasn't convinced that the cinema, this horror suspense and blah, blah. It's just like, I don't know. So, yeah.
In a world where a straight to DVD movie wins a theatrical box office weekend.
The trailer is a confusing, hokey mess. The movie is a confusing. Like, I left the trailer going, like, wait, so they're making a movie, but it is the movie. And it's kind of like what's happening in the first movie. And that's what watching the movie is like, too. So the trailer is completely accurate.
Yeah.
All right. I will accept that determination. I do think it looks like a different kind of movie of this general level of quality. And I prefer the one that I watched. But you're right. It is spot on for the low quality of the film.
This week's Letterboxd lists include, there's a list called One and Done, just for directors who only were allowed to make one movie. Weird horror sequels that completely depart from previous entries. That's a useful list. Mm. And this is my favorite. Hold on. Peanut, they're gone. They left already. All right. And my favorite, butt rock horror, parentheses, horror, mostly from the 2000s, that feels the same way butt rock sounds.
Wow. Wow.
And let's go ahead and get a rating for Urban Legends Final Cut. As I said, here's all of my points. 9 points for the kidney sequence. That worked. Mm. 10 points for the mine ride sequence. That was, I was just joyful beginning to end. I love, and there's a lot of bad horror movies that are like, let's go to an amusement park for no reason. And it always helps. 1 point for the one nerd saying, fuck George Lucas. And then Anthony Anderson saying, you're going to hell, man. 2 points for, I gave you an A in sound for no reason. And then shooting him.
I like that too.
3 points for that scattered pile of prop guns. That was good.
And literal Chekhov's gun with the Pam Grier fangirl gun. Right. Like, she knew to grab the right one because it was a replica of Pam Grier's gun in Coffee, I think. Right,
yeah.
And then 3 points for the last action hero line. Well, those who can't do, teach. That's okay. We're on board. That's up to 28. I give it 28 points. Camila?
That's funny, because I also gave it 28 points, and all of those points went to Loretta Devine.
And I'm predicting, here's Robin Hitchcock to give a higher score than me or Camila on a...
on a horror film.
Horror movie.
You are right. But also, I also started with 28.
Oh, wow.
And then I was like, but I have more affection for this movie. I'm going to look for some bonus points. And I decided to give it a bonus point for every time they said Hitchcock. That's 15 bonus points right there.
Yeah, they really nailed that one in.
The prestigious Hitchcock Award.
Just like Hitchcock.
The Hitchcock Award.
Hitchcock.
You know, Hitchcock's themes might serve you really well here.
Hitchcock.
The Hitchcock.
The Hitchcock.
It's all for the Hitchcock, huh?
The Hitchcock Award.
For the Hitchcock.
And this year's Alfred Hitchcock Award.
Nobody is gonna steal the Hitchcock from me. Especially you, little girl.
So that's 43? Is that how math works? 43!
Yes.
You picked a really convenient last name to have to like when someone says your last name in a movie.
Right.
It's going to come up a lot more for you than for me.
Yeah.
Although it just happened to me. There's a Hammer horror called Captain Clegg, where the bad guy is Officer Collier. And yes, that did make me like it more. In any case, 33 is our score. 33, a perfect... This movie is one third good. But Robin, I'm very happy for you.
Yeah,
I'm very
good time.
This is the way this worked out. Well, let's go to the bingo card.
We got a lot here.
Yeah, we got a new bingo card, Camila.
Yes, and some new stuff on here is someone yells, "I will kill you." We got glowing green liquid. The trope of you should be out looking for blah, blah, blah. And character watching TV or a movie. Character sneaks into where they aren't supposed to be. And can't get cell service. And character gets a note or an email or a letter. So got a lot here. So I'll be surprised if nobody gets a bingo today.
Well, we certainly hit a sequel where the first one didn't go to number one.
Yep. We also get, and I forgot to put a free space on this one, but we also get "I will kill you" because our turtleneck boy says it at the top of the film. Character watching TV or a movie. Yep. Now I made this card well before I even watched the movie. Character gets a note. Vanessa gets a note.
Poor Vanessa.
Yeah. She didn't deserve that. Mendez. She didn't deserve
that. One point, Jennifer Morrison's like, hey, Vanessa, that's not a thing. No one does that.
I dated a Vanessa in high school, and her mom said Vanessa, even though all of her friends said Nessa. We were always, we were going different ways on which two syllables.
Do we have character sneaks into where they aren't supposed to be?
I think so. I mean, I gotta say,
that happens
a lot. Yeah, and I'm torn on woman director. Like, I know, like, initially I meant the director of this film, but now I'm like, maybe.
I think we should keep it for having a woman actually helm the film.
Okay, well that's it.
That doesn't feel like the one to get in on the technicality.
Yeah. So wait, I have five here. Am I missing any? I got watching TV, gets a note, sequel didn't get it, I Will Kill You, and Where They Aren't Supposed to Be.
Yep.
Okay. I do not have a bingo.
Neither do I.
I do not have a bingo.
Shocking.
All right. Well, we will keep it alive.
If we have a babysitter in the next one, then I got a bingo.
I mean, it's horror. Like, right. It happens fairly often. Halloween shouldn't be called Halloween. Horror movies should have descriptive titles. The working title was The Babysitter Murders. That's a better title than Halloween.
Yeah, that makes sense. It tells them, there's no confusion as to what you're getting into.
Well, it's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. What's everybody watching?
I did not watch any new films. I just started watching The Scenes from a Marriage on HBO with Oscar Isaac and Jessica Chastain. And woof. It's really good, but it's also just like, woof, it's difficult watching those kind of like,
I started it
trouble in marriage.
Like, I think I made it around 4 minutes in and I was like, okay, I don't have the emotional capacity to watch this right now. So
yeah.
I am excited to at some point, you know, I feel like that's the kind of movie that you want to like sit down with like a glass of wine and like a warm blanket and like kind of stew in that emotion.
Yeah. And at first I was kind of pissed that I had to wait for week to week for it. I thought it was going to all be up there and I could binge it, but I couldn't. I can't, like, you can't sit there and watch more than one episode at a time like that and without having some sort of emotional reaction. So,
yeah, I don't know. It definitely, it's intense in a way that you have to be in the right headspace for.
Yeah.
Robin, what you watching?
I watched the LuLaRoe documentary, Lou Rich. I love me a good cult documentary.
Yes.
Just love them.
Yes.
As I complained on Twitter, this one really does too much of the like, oh, we're setting up for the interview and they're making awkward small talk while they clip their lapel mic on. And like, I hate that because it feels exploitative to me. Like,
really?
Those people are really vulnerable in that moment and aren't in that. They're not trying, but whatever. Yeah. If you like cult documentaries, watch it.
Yeah. I was hooked. And they're still in business. I don't understand how they're still doing business. And also justice for what's his name? Darren or who can't
home
listen.
Office boy.
Yeah, who can't listen to Kelly Clarkson anymore.
I want Kelly Clarkson to have him on her show. I think that would be great TV.
Right.
I'm sure that she doesn't have it. Like, she doesn't realize the harm that she did. She had no idea, you know? And he is a delight. He should have his own sitcom. And great job to the directors holding those shots.
Yes.
It was like, I can't listen to Kelly Clarkson. And like at some point he's like, this was my favorite song.
Right.
Right.
And I can no longer listen to it and just hold for like a very uncomfortable.
Here's a Klingon proverb.
10 count.
Hold.
It's almost as if his life would suck without her. See?
Hey-o.
Anything else, Rob? You've had a busy week.
I watched the Emmys, and man, do I love award shows that want to be award shows. There were
I didn't see any of it. They just did all the normal things and did them fairly well.
It just felt like a regular award show. It filled me with so much joy.
People were there, presumably all vaccinated and able to hug and attend after parties.
Yeah, so like the first, after Cedric the Entertainer like welcomed everyone, the first like presenter was Seth Rogen, and he was like, why are we doing this? This is bonkers. We're supposed to be outside, but there's a roof. And he's like, I know we're all like to pat each other on the back, but we might be killing each other. And it was very clearly not planned. And I could just imagine the producers having microstrokes. And I appreciated it as someone who is currently working in live theater and currently has that same reaction every now and then. Like, wait, hold up.
Right. Yeah.
Is this potentially homicide? am I Rebecca Gayhart?
Seth is almost unrecognizable. I had to do like a triple take. Like when I saw photos of him, I'm like, who is that? And Seth Rogen. I'm like, no, who is that?
I feel like I see him fairly regularly because of his ashtray collection.
What?
He just makes ashtrays. He's into ceramics and pot, and so he makes ashtrays.
Well, okay, so he's decided to go the Color Me Mine route?
He replaced James Franco with crafts in his life.
But specifically just ashtrays in a time and a place where nobody is like real. I mean, I guess if he's smoking pot, that's what he's using his ashtrays for. Okay. But it's just not the 70s anymore, Seth. Like, not everybody needs an ashtray in their house.
There's a movie called Prisoners of the Ghostland. Don't bother. The only reason anyone has heard of this, it's by a fairly well-regarded cult-type director from Japan, Sion Sono. It got a little buzz because it stars Nicolas Cage. You know Jodorowsky? It's someone going, I'm going to do a Jodorowsky movie, and not really knowing how or how that works. So the point is, if you feel like, whoa, it's the most wild movie, just watch Mandy or Pig or Vampire's Kiss or one of the 12 other wild Nicolas Cage movies. Very briefly, can we talk about Pleasantville? Is Pleasantville actually very good?
I have not watched Pleasantville since 1999. In 1999, when I was 15, I thought it was fucking brilliant.
It's been very, very long time since I've seen it, and I've only seen it once, and I've never really thought about it again.
So like, my main clear memory of this is that orgasms turn you into color.
Oh yeah, that's right. Is that the thing, or is it like a moment of happiness? Is it more like an angel thing, angelus situation?
That was a Letterboxd review. Was like, my favorite part of the movie is when the mom masturbates and orgasms so hard that a tree bursts into flame. Which, true.
We've all been there, Joan Allen.
Yeah. We went on Sunday night. It's the final Row House Cinema pre-grand reopening week. Soft opening week was a 90s week. And we went and saw Pleasantville. And like, my Letterboxd has it at 4.5 stars and Mary Beth's has it at 5. Like, the only reason I don't go to, you know, a near perfect score for it is because it has a lot of fairly obvious metaphors. Yes, it is not subtle about what it's saying, but it's like fun and smart and endearing and engaging and like pretty right minded. I know that people are like, yeah, I like that movie, but rewatching it, I'm like, this is really good. This is like, people should talk about it like they talk about Shawshank and every other movie everybody loves.
Huh. Doesn't it end with like courtroom shit though?
It has a silly courtroom ending.
True. I think that's sort of the thing that like, at the time, people were like, this is really good. And then it kind of falls apart because it goes a little too hard into like courtroom bullshit.
Huh. Yeah, they do clearly not know the way out. Like they to the point where when I was watching it, I was going, I don't remember how this ends because it doesn't actually matter. But I think people tweet at me and tell me whether or not you think Pleasantville is really good. They actually turn color when they experience an emotion that is unusual for them. So like William H. Macy's bored husband turns color when he actually feels love for his wife. Tobey Maguire turns color when gets angry enough to punch somebody, when they stretch beyond their...
Okay.
Yeah, the metaphors are not subtle, but it's a good movie. Anyway, you know what else is a good movie? Horror? That didn't make sense. It's still spooky season, everybody. What you really want is like we do three, right? We do three a year now. That's what we've determined. What you want is like an icon, a bad one, and a surprisingly good one.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So I think we've covered bad.
Yeah. Please, God, let that be the bad one.
Agreed. I feel like we would be very lucky if that's our bad one.
Right.
Maybe this will be surprisingly good if we go back and we think, you know what is actually good? Annabelle Creation? We'll find out.
I don't mind it. I don't hate it, but also...
It's our second annual trip to the Conjuring universe, everybody.
Right. Yes. This always happens. This happens a lot. Annabelle Creation. That's okay. 2017. Okay.
It's on HBO. Good.
Sweet.
Are there two or three Annabelles?
I think there's two.
Annabelle is its own movie.
Right. And then this Creation.
Yes, that's correct. I walked out of this one going, I remember it pretty clearly because I walked out of this going, that wasn't quite good, but it was all around what would have been a very good movie. Like, I think they like had the premise and had the setting and it worked, and it just kind of didn't quite like get into the lane. But then other people said this was one of their favorites in the series.
Yeah, definitely so, not that. My whole thing is just always like, that doll never looked innocent, brand new, fucking straight out the box. Like, why is anybody letting it in their home? Giving it to children. It just doesn't make any sense to me. But okay.
Right, like you should know better.
Right, yeah, look at it. Look at it. But yes.
You watch the movie. How many people say Candyman 5 times? None of them think it's a good idea.
But you, at least you do have the ones that are like, hey, not in my house. You're going to have to take it on somewhere else.
This time around, a few people. Yeah, I hope this is the one where we go, you know.
Right.
That was fine.
Yeah, it still definitely makes Urban Final Cut the bad one. So there's that.
I'm skeptical. We'll see.
Well, before a doll is creepy, Urban Legend 2. I forgot what we just talked about for an hour. Urban Legends Final Cut. Was released on September 22nd, 2000. What was the number one song in America?
NSYNC?
No.
2000 is tricky because you don't automatically vote for Mariah Carey, but I'm going to stretch it, Mariah Carey.
No, not quite. I'm sure on many a radio playlist, both NSYNC and Mariah Carey played right up against this song. So we're in the genre.
Madonna?
Janet Jackson.
Yes.
Oh, Madonna. And I feel. Is it that? Yeah, was that music or something?
Music is correct. Music.
Yes. I have very vivid memories
of, good album.
Of driving around playing that album, like in my in my Honda Civic prior to moving here to Pittsburgh or after I moved here to Pittsburgh.
I had the cassette single of Ray of Light, and I had an alarm clock that would play a tape. So I just had Ray of Light wake me up in the morning because it's very pleasant. You know, it has that like very stringy part at the beginning, and then it gets going. And I don't know why I wanted Madonna every morning, but I did for like a year.
I mean, that song is not a bad way. Like, it almost feels like how the way the song progresses is like your body progressing to wake up in the morning. It's like it's rising from your feet to the top. And so
it's audio coffee.
Yes.